Pinder and Steinberg rolling on your Thursday. Logan Gordon along with you for the 5 o'clock hour. We are here at Sirocco Golf Course for the Glenmore Audi Quattro Cup. Looks like everybody just about getting off the golf course, finishing up their round today. It's been a gorgeous day out here in the foothills. I'd highly recommend you come out and check out this golf course, not just because they're doing great stuff today for kids' sport, but because it's a really nice little gem hidden out back here behind Spruce Meadows. Filling in for Pat and or Ryan today, whichever one you'd like to choose. And I thought if I'm filling in for Pat Steinberg, I might as well steal one of his favorite guests for the hour that Ryan usually hosts. And that would be our good buddy Reed Wilkins from up the road at 6:30. Ched, Reed, how you doing today, buddy?
Now, Logan, quick question for you. Does anyone call you Wolverine as a nickname?
No, I have not been given that comparison yet. I get Logo a lot, Ryan Pinder dictated nickname, but I have not gotten Wolverine.
All right, well,
missed opportunity.
Pardon me?
Do you think that's a missed opportunity for everybody around?
I think that's a huge missed opportunity. Wolverine's a great nickname, of course. Fans of Marvel Comics will know that Wolverine's real name is Logan, and he is indeed Canadian. I think you should just change your name to Wolverine. Just be like, it's sports
maybe
with Wolverine. Like, think how that sounds.
Hey, I think that kind of rolls off the tongue. I'll have to put that by Kirsch next time I'm in a meeting with him. See how he feels if I can get a spot. Maybe if my name's a little bit better than Logo. Thanks for joining us, Reed. Lots to get to with you. We'll start with CFL action. The Edmonton Eskimos out in BC tonight. It's not often in week 5 of the CFL season that you can say the season series comes down to a game in week 5, but that's what happens tonight with an Eskimos victory. They can take the season series right away from Mike Riley and Devon Claybrooks and put a nice little cap in their feather to start the year.
Well, the Eskimos have been talking about that this week, and I think it's something that they are focusing on because as last season slipped away from them in the second half of the season, you know, lost season series to some other teams in the West really wound up costing them. And you know, BC was one team that wound up overtaking the Eskimos in the final couple of months. And a loss in Vancouver late in the season, you know, kind of put the nail in that coffin for the Eskimos. So I think they're looking at, if they're already up 2-0 on the Lions in the season series, and plus you'd have, you know, basically already a 2.5 game lead in the standings, They're taking that pretty seriously for this opportunity. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen tonight. The Eskimos have looked pretty good so far this season. They are coming off a bye. You know, they're 2-1. There's a big difference between saying you're 3-1 or saying you're 2-2. They move the ball very well against Winnipeg. They just got field goals and not touchdowns. 21 points in a 28-21 loss, all on field goals against the Blue Bombers. They ran more than double the number of offensive plays that the Blue Bombers did. So they clearly want to clean that up and bounce back from that game. But I just think with all the hype around Riley going to BC and you know it was funny, Logan. I got the questions about the Eskimos to some extent, but I didn't think that they were going to be as bad as a lot of people were predicting them to be. And, you know, I know on 3downnation.com, I think 3/4 of the panel they had predicting the standings had the Eskimos in last place in the West. And I don't think anybody had them higher than 4th. And I kind of thought, man, I get it. I get they lost Riley. I get there's other changes, but that they brought in a lot of good players too. So I kind of didn't see them finishing last again. And you remember last year they were last with a 9-9 record. It's not like they were 4-14. So, you know, I think the Eskimos, the players that were here last year, have something to prove that they can do better and finish games better and deal with Riley leaving and some of the other changes. And I think the new players are here to say, you know, we're Eskimos now, and a lot of people have sold us a little bit short. So they're taking this game pretty seriously against the Lions, who, let's face it, have not looked good so far this season. Their only win is against Toronto, who I'm not sure they could beat the St. Vincent School for Visually Impaired Boys at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, look, winning on a rouge isn't going to win you any style points. I guess I mentioned to my co-host earlier, do you know that you know, they don't mention how you won the games, but they only mention how many you won. But I think for BC, and Devon Claybrooks. He probably would have liked that Gatorade shower to have come when they were up by 20 or, you know, winning on a last-minute touchdown, not a rouge out of the back of the end zone against the Toronto Argonauts.
That was an odd game, Logan. I've been watching CFL my whole life. I've certainly seen games end on singles and even on missed field goals. I can even remember a couple plays that turned out to be dramatic because the kicker was, I think the Eskimos beat Hamilton that way probably about 20 years ago. They missed a field goal on the last play, and the kick returner was almost out of the end zone, and an Eskimo player dove and knocked his feet out from under him, and he didn't make it out of the end zone. But I don't know if I've ever seen one end where the returner caught the ball and just, you know, in that split second he has to focus on catching it, lost where his feet were and stepped on the line. And then you have the additional storyline of how deep is the end zone in Toronto, and their stadium isn't good enough, even though they moved there. And if it would have been 20 yards deep and maybe only instead of, you know, the alleged 17 that it is, Rainey catches it and probably runs it out. And they kind of had BC rattled again after BC blew the game against the Spamps the previous week. That was an odd ending. That's up there with some of the weirdest. And plus, it was the second time he tried the kick, right? He'd made the first kick,
yes.
and BC was called for a legal procedure. That's one of those really quirky endings. Clearly, the Lions will take it. The Lions are, you know, Riley's getting hit a lot. You know, he is a quarterback, and one of the knocks on him over the years, even when he was, you know, winning the MOP with Edmonton and winning Grey Cup, is that he can hold on to the ball a split second longer than some guys because he's looking for that big play. And obviously the old line play hasn't been very good either. They're trying to get the running backs more involved. You know, Riley was on my show earlier this week, and they're trying to use John White a little bit more and get the running game going a bit more so the pass rush can't just tee off on them. Because that's what happened when they here in Edmonton. The Eskimos knew the Lions were going to pass, and they just went after Riley every time. They hit him a lot. Not all of them were legal, but they still wound up with 7 sacks that counted.
Yeah, and I find that there's always, especially when you change quarterbacks, and we had that conversation in Calgary here about how the O-line would handle, you know, the change from from Bo Levi Mitchell to Nick Arbuckle for their game in Saskatchewan, and they handled it pretty well. When a team goes from a completely new quarterback from, you know, in BC, from Jonathan Jennings, the back and forth they had there, to Mike Riley now, is that something that they have to adjust to, his style of play and, you know, maybe the lack thereof of mobility that he brings, despite the fact that he can obviously complete passes and get that big ball going for them?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're just taking them longer to gel than they thought. And, I mean, the Lions made a lot of changes, too. I mean, they and the Eskimos,
sure,
I believe, brought in the most new players in the off season. And the one thing about the Lions that, even though they got Riley, that made me think, I'm not sure they're going to be as good as people think. And, hey, it's a long season, and Hervey made a lot of great moves last year that helped them turn it around. But I thought the Lions got older. And that's not always a good thing. And, you know, Ed had a lot of success here, and they won in 2015. But they got a lot of guys off that 2015 Eskimos team. And, you know, that's 4 years ago now. And in football, that's a generation of players. So that's what made me kind of worry about the Lions' prospects a little bit.
Just general thoughts around the CFL, Reed. I think we're all kind of understanding that the West is going to have a number of very good teams, and whether that's early on now or later on as the season continues, in the East, we're going to have a hard time keeping up with them. That's no surprise for Montreal or Toronto. I think Montreal has at least shown some glimmers of hope, but you mentioned it earlier. The Toronto Argonauts look lost, and they look like a team that lost their head coach a few days before training camp ended, not the Montreal Alouettes.
Well, I'll tell you what, Logan, in my mind, there were three biggest offseason moves in my mind, and these are the ones I've kind of been following. And I realize, you know, Riley changed teams and Harris changed teams, and the Eskimos, you know, signed Larry Dean, and the Stamps had some turnover. But here were what I thought were the three biggest offseason moves. Number one was Willie Jefferson going from Saskatchewan to Winnipeg. I thought Willie Jefferson was the best player in the league last year. Not the best defensive player. I thought he was the best player in the league. He left Saskatchewan for Winnipeg. Number two was Chris Jones leaving the Riders for Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And number three was Philip Lawley rejoining the Eskimos as defensive coordinator. And so when I looked at those, I thought two of those hurt Saskatchewan because they lost a great player. And say whatever you want about Chris Jones, he's not everybody's cup of tea. He's a great coach, especially on the defensive side of the ball. He gets players to rally and to play for him. So I thought, man, Saskatchewan lost a couple of guys, and so far it looks like it. And they've given up a ton of points, and that never happened when, or rarely happened when Chris Jones was coaching the team. You know, Winnipeg's as advertised so far, and the Eskimos' defense so far is as advertised. They're quicker, they bring pressure, they're more intent on making plays rather than just trying to, you know, limit gains and make tackles. Like, they're really getting after the ball, going for picks, going for sacks. So I thought that despite some of the big-name players on offense that changed teams, I thought those were the three biggest off-season moves. And I think so far I could defend that argument, you know, a month in, that those continue to be the biggest off-season moves.
It's not must-win territory by any means this early on in the CFL season. It's such a long season. We know I think Labor Day weekend is kind of where you see the big movers and shakers and, you know, determining what's going to happen the rest of the way. Do you feel like Toronto needs to pick up a win just to save themselves even from a business standpoint this season? Because, I mean, we all know, and we've talked about, you talked about the field, we've talked about, you know, the lack of fan support out there. Just something positive, even, I mean, I feel like you can't take on-field results even if it comes in a loss and sell that to the fan base out there to try to get people to sell tickets. Where do you come out on what Toronto needs to do? I mean, I didn't think they were going to be this bad.
I didn't think they were going to be this bad. You know what, Logan? I don't know what they do. I'm 45 years old, and I can remember since I was a little kid, what are they going to do about the Argos? You know, they've had brief little resurgences when, you know, Candy and McNall and Gretzky owned the team and they got Rocket Ismail. But it's just always been a problem. And like a lot of people, I was optimistic when they left, you know, the cavernous Rogers Center and moved to BMO, and maybe they had more of that little, that smaller field type feel. Fans are closer to the action. It's, you know, you feel like more of a community going to the games. It's kind of their own thing as opposed to kind of belonging to the Blue Jays. And the attendance is still terrible. And, you know, they're just, it's sad from a CFL perspective. And you and I work in two markets that still care deeply about the team, their teams, and the league has strong roots. I just don't know what they're going to, like, if they went 16-2, would the attendance be great for the East Final for Toronto? I don't know if it would be. You'd probably gain a few people, but I don't know how they turn it around. I mean, they're behind everybody that matters in the city. I mean, the Blue Jays are going to have one of their worst seasons in franchise history, and there's probably more chatter about the Blue Jays in Toronto than there are about the Argos simply because they have Vlad Guerrero. And obviously, so I think so many people put energy into the Raptors into the middle of June that now they're probably kind of taking a break from sports in general in that market. So I don't know. I mean, I wish I had a solution. There were things that happened over the years that I thought might help the team. You know, they traded for Ricky Ray, who at the time was one of the best players in the league, and got them two Grey Cups. I mean, that didn't help. So what helps at this point? I really don't know.
Yeah, and I bring them up because it looks like a potential ass-kicking coming for them tomorrow night in Winnipeg, the way that their season started and the way Winnipeg started. So we'll have to see what happens with that one. We'll change gears with you, Reed, and obviously the team that you cover most of the year is the Edmonton Oilers. We're a few weeks into free agency now. We've seen, you know, most of the big names for the most part find homes already. We've talked at length, I'm sure, of the goaltending swap between the Flames and the Oilers. A few re-signings for Edmonton, nothing really too big coming down. Is it still pretty quiet up the road there, or are you guys still expecting Ken Holland to do something, or are we just kind of in wait-and-see mode right now?
Well, I think he'd like to add another player who could play on the second or third line. Easier said than done. I think most teams are in that boat. I mean, the Oilers had a lot of deficiencies last year, and one of the more prominent ones was that when McDavid and Draisaitl weren't on the ice, there wasn't a lot of time spent in the offensive zone. And, you know, or when Nugent Hopkins was out there, he didn't really have guys who could match his level of offensive ability. I think a storyline now for the Oilers is what's going to happen with Jesse Puljujärvi. This has just turned into a really bad situation with this player. And look, there's a lot of stuff to be picked apart in the past. You know, I thought, you know, the year he was drafted, he started in the NHL. Like, okay, that's cool. Give him a little taste. I thought he should have been back to the minors a lot sooner than he was. Then he's kind of bounced back up and down the last couple of years. He was in the minors when Hitchcock took over. Hitch said, I want to call him up and have him play at the NHL level. And then overall, Hitch used him even less than Todd McClellan did. So I think the Oilers are guilty of some mismanagement here and not being able to commit to a plan with the player. But I also look at now the agent coming out here and really kind of raising the stakes. And I'm thinking, like, what are you doing, man? There's a new regime. There's a new GM. There's a new coach. And you're still sitting there saying, well, the player wants out, or we're going to go to Europe. And then he comes out and says, well, no, I didn't really say that, but you know, we don't want him. Like, it's just you almost feel like somebody needs to go to the agent and say, like, you're not helping. Like, you're supposed to help your player, and this isn't helping. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen. You know, there might be someone who could take a chance on him. Ken Holland has been extremely laid back about it. He said, I'm not going to make a trade unless it helps the Oilers. If he wants to go to Europe, you know, he can go, and he's not saying it in a threatening way. He's just kind of saying, well, if that's the guy's decision, I guess that's his decision. But he's also said, in Detroit, I had players say they didn't want to play for the Red Wings anymore, and some of them wound up still playing for the Red Wings in the future and being good players. I just think it's at the point now, Logan, definitely, I mean, like, everybody knows how bad the Oilers have been, and they made mistakes with Puljujärvi. But I think now, why is the player not saying, why is the agent not saying, all right, here's your chance to grab it. Here's your chance to come in fresh with a new coach and prove it. I think the knock on Puljujärvi is that he hasn't figured out how to contribute to the game when he's not getting points. And he didn't get a ton of points, but we know what the NHL is like. You know, unless you're McDavid or Goudreau or Draisaitl or some of the stars we have in Alberta, you're probably not going to get a point or a goal every game. So what are you going to do to contribute otherwise? Puljujärvi hasn't found that identity yet, or that way to make a difference when he's not hitting the score sheet. You know, I think probably that's been noticed by his teammates, and I wonder if that's a factor here in the agent saying, maybe we got to get you out of this environment. So it's pretty unfortunate. I you know, look, we both know the Oilers have been a pretty easy team to crap on over the last 14 years. But I think it's at the point now where you got to look at what the player and the agent are doing. And you know what? You know, the draft is a great opportunity, Logan, to run into a lot of ex-players and guys you know. And there is an ex-player that I talked to there, and he's not in the NHL, but he was in the NHL recently. And he said, you know what, Reed, I'm sick of this narrative that the Oilers ruined Jesse Puljujärvi. When's the guy going to step up and take some responsibility? And I thought that was an interesting take from a guy who played in the league.
Well, from someone who is in Calgary and all the time, and I, you know, the words coming out of your mouth, Reed, almost read to me Sam Bennett over and over again. When I hear that, a guy that, you know, was used to scoring, used to putting up kind of points, and found himself in a completely different role in the NHL, unable to do what he did in junior or overseas, and now needs to find a way to adapt his game. And I think Sam Bennett's a great example. I know if you're an Oilers fan, you're probably sitting there thinking, we didn't draft him to be Sam Bennett, but you know, Bennett's a guy that's found his way in Calgary and has been a valuable piece for this team, even when he's not scoring goals.
Yeah, and I think for Puljujärvi too, there's, and look, he, and also he had the double hip surgery, so I, okay, there was something obviously bothering him. But again, he's not taking that opportunity to sort of take a fresh start here. And it's all part of that journey for these players that, you know, who are you? Who are you going to be? If you're not feeling 100%, what can you do to earn your ice time and contribute? And I think that's why we saw Puljujärvi. He might start the game on the second or third line, and then by the end of the night, he's at 11 minutes. He's at 8 minutes. He's at 12 minutes. He's at 6 minutes. Like, that's kind of the range he was at most nights under both McClellan and under Hitchcock. Well, why was that? Why was that two coaches basically treating him the same way and using him the same way? Well, it's because they didn't feel they could trust him. It's because they didn't feel he was finding a way to make an impact on the game. So, you know, I hope he gets that. If he goes to a new organization, I hope he's managed a little better than he was earlier in his career in Edmonton. And I also hope maybe at some point his agent just decides to stop talking. That might be the better for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the last thing a 21-year-old needs sometimes is an agent going out there and putting out things left and right and making it that much more difficult on him. And I think you're right. With two coaches who have seen a little bit of everything in the NHL, the player maybe needs to take a look inside and see why both guys who have coached in the league and been so successful both kind of had the same opinion of him. Reed, thanks so much for the time, buddy. I do appreciate it. Lots to hit on with you there. Enjoy watching the Eskimos and Lions tonight, and I'll steal you from Pat's show another time later on this summer, if you don't mind.
Hey, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.